So Nicholas Beisert and Matthias Shattuck are going to give introductory talks on this subject over the next couple of days. And so I thought I would just spend maybe 15 minutes just giving a perspective on the physics if people are interested, since you've all arrived here, and confuse you before they start. So this is basically about the possibility that the n equals four gauge theory in particular is solvable at large n. So this has an ADS-CFT dual. We have solved the weakly coupled gauge theory and the strongly coupled string theory, but there's a serious possibility that this system is solvable for all values of the Tuck parameter. Solvable means, at the least, that you'd be able to calculate or give some kind of equation for all of the anomalous dimensions, at least, and ultimately also things like the correlation functions, which determine string scattering amplitudes. Now, what a solution here means seems to still, and maybe this will change over time, but it still seems to mean the beta ansatz, where either on the string or on the corresponding planar diagram space, you can think about the spectrum as really just a collection of particles, and the particles have only 2 goes to 2 scattering. So this is, let's say, P is the world sheet momentum here with respect to some spatial coordinate. There's only 2 goes to 2. And in particular, any kind of n goes to n scattering is just repeated 2 goes to 2 scatterings. So if supposing first that these particles had no quantum numbers, there was only one species, you could then write down the n-body wave equation, the n-body wave function. The n-body wave functions would just be a plane waves times or an order-dependent phase. So all you have here is a phase for scattering, so an order-dependent phase. And that's the beta ansatz. Now, the particles that are scattering here transform under the symmetries, the space-time symmetries of ADS5 plus S5, so they've got indices. And so the indices, that the index that comes in over here can go out. It can either go out to the right or left or annihilate with the other incoming index. And so there is kind of a second order beta ansatz to keep track of the motion of the indices on the set of particles. But this is the nested beta ansatz, and it is well established. So this is kind of what the form of a solution might look like. And so what's the evidence this is possible here? Well, on the gauge theory side, it's true at one loop, and it's true at two loops, and it's partly true at three and four. Nicholas will, I guess, tell you more precisely, but it's true to some interesting number of loops. On the string theory side, actually, I think is the strongest evidence.
That
you can write down a beta ansatz solution, that there is some beta ansatz description of the system in which the n-body wave function is of this form. And
you have to go from an n-body wave function to eigenvalues of the dilatation operator.
Right, okay, so the dilatation operator is the Hamiltonian here.
Yes.
And in particular, another piece of the beta, since the Hamiltonian is just the sum of the single particle energies.
Sorry, this is a really stupid question. What particles? I mean, are we doing a CFT?
Okay, so, well, it's.
You mean that H status is made out of some matrices satisfying M. Baxter equations or something like that? And that's true to three loops in the perturbation theory?
The dimensions. Well, if you, on the gauge theory side, where your Hamiltonian is the Hamiltonian radio quantization, the dimensions are given as a sum of single particle energies, where the single particle energies are determined by, once you have this wave function, the fact that it's periodic quantizes the momenta and therefore the energies. Please correct me if I say anything wrong.
Well. Yep. The only thing is that that's not necessarily wrong, but there might be two solutions, because there might be two systems.
You're saying that there might be ADS and CFT.
You are describing it in the language that is appropriate for the plane wavelength.
No, not at all. No, this is true in the this kind of structure appears.
This is meant to be for general N equal 4 gauge series.
Yeah, generally.
So what's P?
What's
P?
So I'm used to thinking about this from the string theory side, where P is simply the momentum conjugate to sigma. There is some corresponding object on the gauge theory side, which does it have a natural interpretation?
Yeah, it's momentum. I mean, it's a composite operator, so you can put labels on the positions of whatever is inside the operator, and the dual to this position is the momentum.
The composite operator is traced via the M.
Right, so you say if you say in this PMN language, for example, then when you have impurities which are more like excitations actually, then they have positions and that's a trace.
But Hiroshi was just specifically asking that you're not in those plane wave limit.
No, but the picture is the same. Do you have some composite operator? So in order to describe how it's composed, you have a notion of coordinates in that trace, and the dual to these coordinates are the momentum.
I think what he's saying, the gauge theory point of view is like a lattice, right? You have finite points. The string theory is like continuum.
Yeah, but when you put it on a circle, mm-hmm. The string theory is on a cylinder, then there's also some kind of lattice from that.
Well, it's slightly different, right? This P goes from all the way to infinity.
Yeah, how the derby works is one of the big mysteries.
Sorry to interrupt you.
No, this is good. This is good.
This is true. You were at the point. This is true for your four loops of the gauge theory.
So right. So up here with this gauge theory, the wave functions, the operators of definite anomalous dimension, written this way in the string theory. So what's the evidence? The strongest evidence that some structure like this.
So this is true. This is true for general n equal 4 gauge theory for one and two loops. That's a fact.
For one loop, it's certainly true. For two loops and three loops, it's very probable in some sectors at least.
Okay,
just to say it's true, but
that was a conservative statement. Yeah.
I mean, there are specific calculations that I think you did using this assumptions that gave the right answer. So he computed the dimensions of some operators.
For any operator?
For one operator, he computed. I think he got the right answer because he did that.
So he's being careful.
Bravo.
Thank you. Doing it for one operator, you improve it, right?
That's right.
But for one operator, it doesn't constitute proof.
So the operator you consider is one that creates this huge string, is that the idea? You create a big string and that has momentum around it?
Yeah, the operator is the one that creates the string. The structure is present even for particles of small numbers of quanta, right? I mean, it's the comparison with string theory is made for large operators.
Something bothers me because particles, do they carry the index of global symmetry?
Yes, I said that.
So they are in representations of PSU.
Yes.
And the representation depends on P.
P is a momentum, not necessarily. Well,
no.
If it doesn't depend on P, then this implies that anomalous dimension, which is the center of the PSU group.
It's not the center.
P is the momentum on the worksheet, or the parameterization of the
PSU. That's why it's bothers me, because this would imply that kind of if the energy is sum of individual energies, and each individual energy is in fact.
Nicholas will answer all your questions tomorrow, but go ahead and ask now so he knows. No, go ahead and ask now so he knows what you're going to ask him tomorrow. Okay. What I wanted to say was, I think the best evidence that this is true comes from the string theory side of the duality, where one knows that there's a one parameter, it's a complex parameter, family of concerned charges, which look like Wilson lines. and again, z is a parameter. And these are the vector potential here is built out of the local world sheet currents. And it has zero field strength, which it's non-trivial, it's physically non-trivial, it's built from these physical currents, but it has zero field strength, and that implies that the Wilson line is independent of position. It can be deformed freely and it's conserved. And so these conserved currents, because they're charges, which are of this funny non-local form, because this is a matrix in the the symmetry space of ADS5 cross S5. And so this is like a Wilson line. It's multi-local and it's multi-local. Now,
is this a statement about the actual world sheet stereo string or some analogous model?
This is a statement. Okay. This is, first of all, a classical statement about the ADS5 cross S5 world sheet theory, the exact one. And Berkowitz, in his pure spinner formulation of that theory, has shown that these survive quantization. Now, apparently earlier in this program, the cross-off.
The one loop is one there?
No, it's a cohomology argument, so it's supposed to be exact. Not understanding the pure spinner theory, I can't answer that question, but cohomology arguments usually mean that there are more ways to fix the operator than there are possible things that might break the symmetry. I don't know if that's the exact form of the argument. But Nekrasov, apparently early in the program, was saying there might be an anomaly in the pure spinner. I don't know if anybody knows anything about this. Which, if it's true, it would invalidate that. But to the extent that Berkowitz's formalism, including this last argument he made, makes sense, then one knows that the world sheet theory does have some kind of higher symmetry structure in it, and the claim is as an exact statement.
Is he giving any hint as to how I can use this?
I think he's just constructing them. You should. Maybe we should have someone teach us about pure spinners. I certainly don't.
So is this supposed to be for long string?
Okay, good. So these operators, if you have a finite string, then it's conserved only if you close it and take the trace. And however, it can wind any number of times before you trace. So you can effectively observe any representation or equivalently the independent eigenvalues of this operator. The eigenvalues of Gaussian invariant are conserved. Again, you'll hear more about this in the next couple of days. On an infinite string, which I think is always good to think about, just an infinite one-dimensional system, then in fact the open traces. The open exponentials without tracing are conserved as long as things don't run up to infinity. So how are these used? If we were interested not in the finite system but the infinite system, and if we were interested in a one-dimensional theory that instead of being conformal like the world sheet theory of the string had a mass gap, like various sigma models of dynamical masses, then the existence of this kind of current is enough to show that the S matrix for that system factorizes in precisely this way. And it strongly constrains it. It doesn't determine it. It strongly constrains it, and so
that's the S matrix as some kind of world sheet.
The S matrix, okay. S matrix in the world sheet. It's in the world sheet. This is every world sheet, This is the planar space of the Feynman diagram.
Can you repeat the statement? You started out by talking about the classical theory.
Classical theory. Then I said these survive in the these are claimed to survive in the quantum theory. You can show by two routes. One route is to use the fact that these things usually have poles, and at the poles you can pick out the local currents. And one knows that having local higher spin currents is enough to show that the S matrix is factorizable. But it's also been shown directly from the non-local currents.
Local high spin currents?
Pardon?
What kind of
Well, again, the discussion here is for, I'm now sort of segueing to cases where where again there's a mass gap and a real S matrix and things like the ON sigma models and so on.
So because it's local.
They have well, you know this of course. That,
oh, I didn't understand.
But in fact,
they were scalars.
Pardon?
I thought they were scalars.
The charges?
Yes.
I don't think so. Certainly, the ON sigma models have both these and spin 3 and spin 4 currents. And the existence of even one spin 3 or higher current is enough to show that the S matrix factorizes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if you work at a light cone gauge, the part of the sigma model may not be conformal. Does that help?
Well, I don't know. The problem with light cone gauge in this subject is that you lose you lose some of the structure. You lose world sheet Lorentz invariants, which from some points of view is useful, but not from others. In fact, there's a small literature recently on the forms of these charges in light cone theories. I don't know. There's been relatively little done in the subject in the light cone, I think is a fair statement to me.
But if you had like a matter part of the theory that had a RG flow, you would then learn that string theory is a
well, that, oh, I see what you're saying. So, good. The argument that these charges imply a factorized electric, the standard argument assumes Lorentz invariants it was directed at one-dimensional field theory, so it assumed Lorentz invariants. It might be sufficiently Galilean invariants, I'm not sure. In more than two dimensions, this would become the Coleman-Medulla theorem, which tells you that the S matrix is one. But in two dimensions, it simply tells you that it's factorizable and gives you a lot of information about it, but doesn't determine. There's these finite ambiguity, the CDD poles, so the finite ambiguity in the S matrix.
This picture with particles.
So
it survives the continuous limit, sort of.
Continuous limit of the world sheet.
Yeah, I will be more comfortable with this thing from the lattice, this particle, than it's a continuum limit because there is no conformal theory in data.
Right. So having these charges, if we were talking about a field theory that had a mass gap, would be a lot of information.
Yeah.
But now the world sheet theory is conformal and doesn't have a normal S matrix. It doesn't have a normal sort of particles don't separate. Nevertheless, Zamolodchikov has shown in various examples that the S matrix still plays the same role in sort of allowing you to construct a beta ansatz. That is, even though it doesn't have its usual interpretation, this construction still makes sense, at least again in the large volume limit. So to get to the string theory, first of all, there's the problem that it's conformal, and secondly, there's the problem that it's finite volume, and knowing everything about the infinite volume doesn't tell you everything about the finite volume. And this is a hard problem in this whole subject on both sides. That is, going from understanding this to understanding this. It's a classic hard problem.
So if you looked at the ADS times sphere sigma model and the sphere part itself, by itself have a mass gap.
If you threw away the fermions, the sphere part by itself would run to strong coupling.
Right. Right. And the Ramon fluxes are balancing that as long as.
Right. Right.
That doesn't change what you said.
But it's a totally different system, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, So.
Do you need to know anything about commutation of these cubes?
So.
I mean, the algebra?
If there's a close connection between the structure coefficients of the Qs and the S matrix. So if you knew one, you'd know the other.
Yes.
But just knowing about, I believe the statement is just knowing about their existence without knowing their commutators, you know that the S matrix factorizes.
But in point of fact, shouldn't they satisfy some kind of rating relations?
In the infinite volume system where they're untraced, they satisfy one of these Yangian algebras about which I know relatively little. I don't know if anybody here does. And again, but on the finite volume system where they're traced, it's abelian. They all commute. So it's a pretty simple algebra. Yeah. Yeah.
And what does it mean that the theory is conformal? Does it mean that implies something about the dispersion relation?
Right. So in infinite volume, the dispersion relation on the world sheet is V equals 1. Right. So just to give one, so one of the nicest things in this whole subject works directly from these charges, where Kazakov, Marshakov, Minahan, and Zarembo, extended by various people, and you'll hear more about this again from Nicholas, we're able to just basically use these, the existence of these charges and very little else. One knows a fair amount about their analytic structure. They're analytic in most places. They have a few poles which are related to the local charge in the system. They were able to essentially find the general classical solution. That is, they were able to write down a spectral curve from which you could extract the anomalous dimension. So again, this is the classical limit. The classical limit means that you've taken, think about this, this is a classical field theory. So it's first of all, you've taken the classical limit, the charge goes to infinity, so many quanta. And also the dimensionless world sheet coupling, which is 1 over the square root of the Tuck parameter, goes to 0. So they've been able to solve the system pretty completely in this limit. Again, they did it for a subsector, and Nicholas and others extended it to the full spectrum. And so the problem is to, well, in some sense, to undo these two limits. And it's becoming clear that these are two separate limits. So in the limit of infinite charge, the beta ansatz, which starts out as discrete equations for the quantization of these momenta, become some kind of continuous equation for the density of particles in momentum space. And for those of you who look, for example, at large end limits of matrix models, it's the same kind of thing where in the large charge limit you get a continuous integral equation. Anyway, so to undo the infinite charge limit, this continuous beta ansatz has to go back to a discrete one. And to go back to the quantum world sheet again, they use classical properties of these. And so this is kind of where the subject is. There's a large amount of guesswork. Everybody who works on it from one way or another is doing a lot of calculating and guessing and checking, I should mention one thing. So I talked about the gauge side and the string side and some evidence of integrability on both sides. And indeed, it's the same beta ansatz, the same integral equations in special limits. But also there are so-called discrepancies. And what those discrepancies mean is that things, the interpolation between weak and strong coupling is not as simple as was assumed. There are functions of this dimensionless coupling, which are similar to the famous three quarters in the black free brain entropy, where you have functions which are numbers like 1 at strong coupling and three quarters or 0 at weak coupling. And it's clear that there are a few low orders where these don't appear for some reasons that might be connected with supersymmetry and integrability and the combination between them. But as you go to higher orders, these functions appear. And so there's no clear understanding now of the general form of the beta ansatz for the system. Anyway, like there's a lot of guesswork. I always like to compare this with rational conformal field theory, a subject that Greg, for one, knows and loves. The reason is because if the world sheet theory had Nevaux-Schwartz, if the string theory had Nevaux-Schwartz instead of Ramond backgrounds, This subject would have been much easier because there would be a current algebra, there would be a familiar sort of infinite dimensional world sheet algebra, which would essentially determine, after satisfying a few constraints, the spectrum, the correlation functions.
So what about ADS3 over NS1?
So in fact, there are examples, ADS3, where you do have Navojvod's backgrounds, and again, various people here have helped to develop that. In those cases, in that exact case, the CFT side is much more mysterious. In fact, I think it's correct to say that there is no limit there in which the CFT side becomes free. So you don't have, it's interesting, but you don't have.
There's an orbital point in the module, I suppose.
But it doesn't correspond to the NS background.
Well, it corresponds to turning on a Riemann field.
I think what Joe stated is that if you restrict to in the space of NS backgrounds,
yes,
there isn't a weakly coupled limit.
Yeah, I think that's right.
I don't think that's right. Okay. I thought that Larson and Martin had mapped out the module I space, and there's a line, there's a sort of the horizontal axis that's somewhere along the one axis, and there's a line along which you have the symmetric product theory. But it's, and I agree, far from the space-time background you want to study with zero room.
Okay,
good. That's
good. Okay, so it's true that the CFT side is, in that sense, much more serious. So anyway, if that was the situation here, we'd have a crank we could turn, and it would be very much easier. But instead, it's very painful. Every step is again guesswork, and the general structure isn't clear. So there's clearly a need. I mean, integrability is old. The subject is 30 years old, and nobody has found this crank. But given the evidence that there is some kind of you know, higher structure here, and that ultimately one will be able to use it to solve this system and maybe others.
That's 74 years old.
74? Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
I have the vague impression.
Almost as old as beta.
I have a vague impression that the theory of quantum groups and Gangians and all of that was supposed to.
Well, did anybody know it? I mean, it hasn't. I don't. That appears.
Is it supposed to be the mathematics that was supposed to solve the solvable theory?
It doesn't get cited very much in the literature. So if anybody knows what it is, maybe they can make a quick killing.
Sorry, what did you just say?
The Leningrad school started out with the Young-Baxter equation and developed this whole mathematical theory of quantum groups and q-deformed current algebras, which was then formalized by Drinfeld and Jimbo, and it's this enormous mathematical subject, which I thought was supposed to be about the representation theory of q-deformed quantum groups. Useful to this. We're supposed to play the analogous role. I'm thinking about your analogy.
Right. Yeah.
Field theory. I thought it was supposed to be, you know, the analogous mathematics to the WZW, to current algebra, for massive integral allowance. Maybe I'm just wrong.
But integrals isn't a much bigger subject because there's plenty of things which have never been put, which have never been explained within this framework, so it's not like a universal.
Including these. That's why, I think it's quite relevant to ask what's the algebra of the groups.
Let's see, normally when you quantum deform an algebra, you change the group, right? It's not the original group is not the symmetry, the new theory, or is it?
Well, okay, so if you Q deform an SL2,
right.
The SL2 Lie algebra, it certainly isn't.
Yeah, so
SL2
it's not
anymore.
That's right, but so in this context, you want to still have the global symmetry, right?
No, but I mean, these Qs might form some algebra which has some nice representation theory. I think that's what I was suggesting. I think supposing the Qs form some kind of quantum group type algebra, know about the representation.
But it's not quantum groups.
Sorry?
It's not quantum groups. It's kind of rational deformations.
I'm using quantum groups in a very loose sense. I mean, some kind of Q deformations of a current algebra or something.
No, but there's one thing that's important that somehow, integrability doesn't require symmetry. That is.
I thought that's what the Young-Baxter equation was all about.
No, but I mean, you can completely destroy. You can even destroy these quantum symmetries, and then I mean, then it comes to things like X, Y, Z, and then it's not clear how to put those into the quantum group.
I'm really confused. I thought that if you have an integrable S matrix, you have the Young-Baxter equation for the 2-to-2 scattering, right? I thought that there's a paper of Tuftajan Reshetikin and Fadeyev, when they take the solution of the Young-Baxter equation and they introduce these operators they call L, and they have a braiding matrix, like L1, L2 equals this Young-Baxter matrix, L2, L1. And then the matrix elements of the L's generate a non-commutative algebra, which is some one of these, what I'm loosely speaking of as a quantum group. And I thought that those, if that you want to represent that algebra, and then those, So there is a symmetry. I mean, that was the Leningrad school interpretation. They were trying to find what the symmetry was that was lying behind these integral systems.
And so Matthias is saying that if you're looking at X, Y, Z case, and you're dealing with elliptic, elliptic version of the story that you mentioned.
Yes.
The one with the car matrix and so on.
Yes, good.
And I'm not sure that has been worked out completely. Not even completely.
The algebraic structure in that case is not known.
It's something even more complicated.
But maybe there are some examples. As usually, the trigonometric is the top of the story.
Oh, okay.
But it's also clear that somehow these Q deformations have not been working for any of the sports so far. It's kind of clear that in terms of these R matrices, the R matrices are some sort of deformed things, but they are rational. Not trigonometric. Quantum groups lead to trigonometric R matrices.
I thought the Eliza case was the Scleon analogy.
Huh?
There are examples, but for R matrices, if you look at the list of solutions, since trigonometric is you get fairly completely easy. For elliptic, you get some examples, but not much.
Greg says rational, R matrices, trigonometric, and elliptic.
Yeah.
That seems, and then there's even yet other things on higher Riemann surfaces.
Is there anyone who'd like to give a talk on quantum groups at some point? I know nothing about it.
So, Sergey, you think that if you deform it so that Young can pick up some quantum group, quantum affine algebra?
I don't understand the distinction. To me, Young can as an example of quantum group.
So you don't think that complication is in that Youngian has more complicated representation theory than, say, quantum affine algebra or fine. Not an expert either. From the expert that the representation theory of this Youngian is so underdeveloped that it cannot be applied to this particular case.
Well, it means it's underdeveloped. It that you do have this underlying symmetry.
Well, yes. Yeah, so in a sense, that's what they are doing.
This is a neat case. So it's whatever.
It's mathematical.
Tied to AS5 times S5, or is it something that extends a few? Well, the space-time symmetry is more. I mean.
So these charges exist. They exist for a wide class of sigma models. Their construction usually uses the global symmetries of the sigma model. And one question is, as you deform to less symmetric things that are more QCD-like, does any of that survive? And so far, at least, I don't think there are any really optimistic results there. But
I mean, this is an infinite set of currents, right? So finite global symmetry wouldn't seem to be so crucial.
No, but it comes up in their construction. It comes up in the construction of what these are. So most cases where that these are known really are fairly symmetric. But I guess, I mean, so obviously, they're
process. You make
AES
2 process 2?
AES 2 process 2? Probably would, yeah.
You make use of the fact that target space is a symmetric space?
I mean, this construction. Now, there are integrable systems that have no global symmetries, but they're the current. I mean, I don't know how one, what the lever is that enables you to construct them.
Well, but if you start with these and you add all the perturbation from
right, so
does it deform those things in some way?
Well, okay, so. Some relevant perturbations preserve integrability. In fact, one of the ways to get at the conformal system in many cases is to consider the integral perturbation take that S matrix and go back. I think for the ADS5 theory, a lot of this structure becomes more well defined if the world sheet is a lattice. But if the ADS5 theory had a perturbation, could be latticized, preserving integrability, you'd probably have more levers. Or if you could break the conformal invariance, preserving integrability again, you'd probably have more levers to apply. And I don't know whether either of those are known to be possible.
Let's see, the question of whether you can deform, make it massive.
Yes.
How would you analyze it? You would just.
Well,
you for. Write down invariant operators and.
That would be the straightforward thing. There's a funny deformation that Neely and I have applied in an analog model where you deform, you add epsilon degrees of freedom. So it's not an obvious deformation. You add epsilon degrees of freedom to the system and take epsilon goes to zero. So that's, again, there might be other more direct things.
But that one is one that works. So if you
that works not for well, not necessarily for this system, but for systems that have some of the same symmetries. Right. I mean, maybe I maybe.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you made it work in some other example. Right. But is why doesn't it work here?
Well,
or you know it doesn't work here.
No. We were actually we're trying to do the SPNN group, which is I guess SUNN group. Which I guess is close to what you have for the ADS3 Ramon theory. So, yeah, there's some hope that's one way to get. And what we're doing gives you insight into the Werner-Lenard corrections, but not the finite J corrections. Those are a totally different.
Why? Because there are more fields on the quantum level.
Which are they?
Why is that different?
Oh, because finite J is hard. Finite J is which means finite volume. Is again this issue that knowing everything about the infinite volume system doesn't tell you everything about the finite volume system.
Is it easy to implement a physical state condition?
It seems to come up. It seems to in fact be implemented naturally. When you talk, Nicholas, when you talk about the sigma model, the spectral curve, is it easy to explain how the physical state conditions get implemented? I mean, they seem to get implemented very easily, right?
Periodicity.
No, the what? So as the
zero constraints,
right? There is
kappa symmetry or whatever that you right. have.
Oh, they are kind of they live a separate life, but you impose them on the spectral curve.
In the picture on the right side or left side or what? Which side are you talking about?
Right side.
Mm-hmm.
There seems to be sort of a natural gauge fixing at least for
ways. They seem to be quite important. They make
the problem easier.
Yeah, much easier.
Right. So the physical states are simpler to study than the general non-sigma model excitations.
Is it?
Yes.
If you heat the system up, does that really does in some way?
If you heat it up, well, I mean, the classic thing to do is to calculate the central charge using, Carty's trick. But you're. Oh, well, you.
Well, I mean, it's another way of introducing confinement.
Mm-hmm. Right. Actually, good. That's.
But it's in the same theory.
I have this. Conjecture that one way to solve a finite volume system is to heat the system up until the correlation length gets very short, put it on finite volume, then cool it down. Yeah, I mean, I don't know whether you can actually implement that, but I in terms of an actual algorithm, that might do it because it does what you say. It makes a very short correlation length, which is insensitive to the volume. The question is whether you really can.
I thought what people did was to look at the theory.
In the other direction.
Explain that, yeah.
Okay. Right. So. The thermodynamic phenons, suppose you know everything about this in the limit of very, very long lines, and you want to know about a circle, then you consider a world sheet that looks like this. But there's a very strict limit. You can calculate, so this is a thermal, this is now a thermal state in the theory that you understand. And so it's knowing its free energy tells you the central charge on a circle, which is one fact. And by putting twists in, you can calculate the energies of a finite number of states, which are kind of the lowest states in various sectors. But this is not the correct. You aren't able to use this. And I think this is something that Zonal Electrical Clubs have pushed on. But I think it's correct to say that it's still sort of a limited set of states that this really gives you information about.
But
I mean, maybe this is something more effective.
I asked him what he thought about this method. And
yes.
He said, well, there was never really a strong need for computing more, but perhaps you could do more.
Maybe he just needs to be told that we really want to know the answer. He's pushed fairly hard on this, and the wanting to know, in fact, the finite volume spectrum is clearly a, because if your interest is statistical mechanics, again, you want the anomalous dimensions, which is the energies of finite volume, and so for example, for the analog model that Neil and I studied, the condensed matter people know the anomalous dimensions exactly for one value of the coupling, but they don't have any way to move off of that. So it's there's interest in these from. So we have two talks this week. I've heard a lot of people say there are not enough talks in this program. Maybe I heard wrong. Right? Anyway, it's also been suggested that Neil, you give a talk next week about sort of our perspective on the lambda corrections on the sigma model. What else? What else do we want to hear about? We also have a few more people arriving next week who've worked on this, Radu and Serban. So what other directions? Quantum groups? Should we just...
Well, bugs, yes.